This is Jackie B. Peterson. I'm the author of Better, Smarter, Richer, 7 Business Principles for Solo and Encore and Creative Entrepreneurs. It's my mission to help solos, those of you in one-person businesses, understand and apply the 7 solo business principles to your enterprise and find greater financial success. Solo businesses are definitely distinctly different from traditional businesses, and to find the financial success you are looking for as you launch and run your solo career, there's some things you definitely need to do, and that's what we talk about in Better, Smarter, Richer. So please go to my website, bettersmarterricher.com, sign up for the newsletter, join the conversation on the blog, and you can download the free ebook explaining the 7 business principles. And, of course, you can buy the workbook. Better, Smarter, Richer is a fill-in-the-blanks workbook because I'm really encouraging you to take a look at the thinking that is holding you back from the success that you're looking for. So today, my guest is Leslie Stager. Leslie is an RN and an LMT, and she has attended over 500 births. Wow, what a privilege for you, Leslie. She's devoted her career to the belief that birth can be both empowering and pleasurable. She developed and directs the 60-hour maternity massage certification program at Oregon School of Massage, and we'll talk about her many other accomplishments in the field. In addition, Leslie has been a wilderness rites of passage guide. That sounds interesting, too. And since 1980, she's been walking with women between the worlds of birth and death, most metaphorically and physically. She is now integrating the concepts of earth, birth, and death in her work. I'm looking forward to my discussion with Leslie. Welcome, Leslie.
Thank you very much. Looking forward to sharing.
I'm glad you're here. This will be very interesting. So you just have had a really rich and interesting career, Leslie. Kind of tell us your story. You know, like, where'd you grow up? When did you know that you wanted to practice massage focused on birth and pregnancy? You know, how's that career expanded? Just tell us your story. We'd love to hear it.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, well, I grew up in Connecticut and Maine, so I'm an East Coaster originally, but now I'm a bi-coastaler. I live in both worlds of the East and the West. And I spent a lot, every summer of my life I spent at summer camp. My dad was a camp director. So that really influenced a lot of the choices I've made in my life. And my sense of my entrepreneurial spirit, I would say, came out of a lot of what he's done in his life and also the people I met on that during those camp summers. But I had always wanted to travel the world, and I had a plan to gain as many skills as I could to allow me to travel far and wide, and one of the skills I thought I needed was to become a midwife, even though I, at that point, wasn't that connected with birth. And I thought in order to become a midwife, I should become a nurse first. So I set off to go to nursing school in my late 20s. And I, in that process, decided that actually I didn't need to become a midwife. I could just be a nurse. And I worked for years as a labor and delivery nurse. And I worked out in most of the years out in Vancouver at Southwest Washington Medical Center. And during that time, I also became a massage therapist because that was one of the other skills I thought that would be travel well around the world that I could do anywhere. And as I was doing the massage program, I was working as a nurse in Southwest Washington, and I was seeing women coming in always holding their back and complaining of pain in their hips and their legs and their back and their shoulders from all the changes going on in their body. And I knew right away then that my massage practice needed to be focused with these women. And at the time, this was in the early 90s, there really was very, very little information about working with pregnant women. Most people thought it could be dangerous. There's still a lot of myths about the dangers of doing work during pregnancy, doing body work. But in these couple decades since then, there's been much, much more favorable information and research coming out about the benefits of touch during pregnancy throughout the whole pregnancy cycle, from conception to mothering and the great, great importance of that for moms and babies and partners as well, for a whole family system touch is really quite critical. So I've been following this path and helping to develop and cultivate this path. I ended up writing a book, one of the few. There's only three or maybe four textbooks about pregnancy massage, and I'm one of those authors.
So talk some more about this work. You're telling us you're one of the very first that connected massage to the process of being pregnant and giving birth. Is that right? There were very few people who were doing that?
I can say that I am definitely not one of the first, because in reality, around the world, women have been nurtured with touch throughout their pregnancy, birth, mm-hmm. and mothering, even up to 2 years in some cultures. After giving birth, moms and babies would be massaged daily. So in our society, then, yes, I would say I'm in the forefront of people who saw this as a great need and helped to develop and cultivate the standards around what is normal and what is acceptable and what is safe and what is necessary. So I am in that realm in America. One of the early pioneers of developing this work, along with a couple other women who are really influential in this work.
Wow, that's fantastic. And you know, you're right. I think that there was the idea that this wasn't safe, maybe, you know, and mm-hmm. you ought to worry about it. And I suppose it's the same kind of thinking that, you know, made women, what were they, strangers to all kinds of things and considered lesser beings and, mm-hmm. you know, were diagnosed with hysteria and, you know,
right.
there's been so much going on around women. And here you are,
yeah.
you know, providing a really wonderful path for women to feel better while they're pregnant and have a better experience when they're giving birth. Good for
yeah,
you.
And so one of the things that I like to share about that and one of the aspects that I like to teach about is really the known benefits of touch during this cycle and how I feel like this is the way to help shift the whole world, really. I say we can change the world by touching moms, because in reality, when we're touching moms, and this is anybody, grandmothers, grandfathers can touch babies and touch pregnant moms if they're open to that, you know, if that's mm-hmm. a relationship that can be established. And it serves both the giver and the receiver. But moms who are touched during pregnancy end up with, and during labor, end up with less postpartum depression as well as prenatal depression, end up with better flow of hormones of oxytocin and prolactin, which help to support a healthy birth and sustenance of the baby. They end up with decreased discomfort in their body. And they also end up relating much more readily to their baby. They end up touching their babies more than women who didn't get touched. And what's important about that is that babies need touch to survive. Babies will die. Even if they're
yes.
given food, they will die without touch. So moms who touch their babies more, and there's been studies that show even a few hours extra over the first early period after birth, those babies that get touched a few hours extra end up with higher IQs, better social skills, better immune systems. There's a whole array of how this ends up influencing the development of a baby by the fact that we touch a mom when she's
wow.
pregnant and when she's
wow.
a new mom as well. So,
wow, that's pretty fantastic.
Great.
That's really pretty fantastic. This is big work you're doing, Leslie.
It feels like big work when you
yeah.
put it in that context. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, when you're out changing the mother-child relationship, you know, one at a time, and you're, you know, creating when you create a stronger bond, that you get more centered people, better well-being. You know, we all need that. Wow.
Mm-hmm. And
I really appreciate you sharing that. I hadn't seen it that way.
Yeah, and I think, you know, because you've talked about this show being oriented in some ways toward people 50s and older, I can say that there's been research on at nursing homes bringing babies in for the people, residents of nursing homes or elder facilities, to touch the baby and massage and hold babies, and both end up benefiting so much so the depression rate of the elders decreases. So I have a vision of, wouldn't it be great to have a way to integrate communities more so that the elders can help the new moms by taking care of the babies at times, or babies can come and help out the elders, you know, by just being present with their great, incredible love that they have to share.
I love that. I love that picture. You know, I really love mm-hmm. that picture. And, you know, that touch will get rid of, you know, depression and fear for the elder, you know, and they'll feel really mm-hmm. Connected and wanted, and mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. so does the baby. You know, when you yeah. hold a little baby, they just kind of settle right in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They're pretty wonderful. As you were talking, I was thinking of my experiences holding my own babies and, you know, holding babies, and it's been pretty fabulous. Big
mm-hmm.
stuff.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. So you now teach your skills, right? So can you tell us
mm-hmm.
about what you teach and where you teach it?
Yes. Well, I've been teaching for 20 years. After while I was working as a nurse, I saw the need for teaching the massage skills to others for pregnant women. So I developed a whole program that's called the Mother Touch Maternity Massage Certification Program. And you can take individual classes. They're mostly oriented towards massage therapists who want to expand their skills and their clientele to be able to really serve pregnant, laboring, and new moms really, really well. So I teach essentials, fundamentals of pregnancy massage, as well as advanced classes and postpartum and birth classes. And the birth massage classes are also geared towards birth professionals, midwives, doulas, nurses, and couples. Anybody can take those classes and learn about supporting moms through labor. And then I'm also teaching, I've just started to be teaching midwives skills in assessing pelvic floor tone, because midwives are always working with moms and their pelvic floor. This is critical during birth, of course. But there's a lot of issues that can develop in the musculature, musculoskeletal system, not the pelvic, whole pelvic bowl and pelvic
mm-hmm.
floor, that influence how a baby's positioned, influence how a baby's born, and how a mom recovers from birth. So I'm working with midwives to get more familiar with the pelvic floor musculature and ways of addressing tension and imbalance in the pelvic floor to help support that process.
Wow.
That's what I'm teaching right now.
Wow. This is really interesting. And I know that you've also worked extensively with other passages, you know, the end-of-life
mm-hmm.
passage as well, and have worked as a hospice nurse. What
yeah.
kind of led you to that decision?
Well, that comes to the story of the guidance that I received after spending a week alone in the desert on what was called a walkabout.
Oh, wow. So when did you take this walkabout, and what made you decide to do that? And then you can tell us about
yeah.
the learning.
Okay. All right. Well, that that was just I heard about people doing this work out in the desert in the Death Valley area, Big Pine in California. I was in the East Coast at the time, but I met someone who was working with these people, Stephen and Meredith Foster, who are the people who really brought to the anglicized world the sense of the need for a real rite of passage in our lives to acknowledge shifts and transitions from one life status to another, and that all cultures have always had ways of acknowledging these passages through life, whether that's from birth to becoming an adult to transitioning into motherhood to the dying process as well, or becoming a warrior, or becoming a full-fledged adult in a community. And in our society has really lacked that acknowledgement of those life transitions in a really significant way. When I heard about them, I was just completely yesed. I knew. There was no question. I had to go. And I love it when in my life there's that absolute yes, no question about it.
Yes.
So I think that's really important to have in any undergoing any process. So I went out and I studied with these people, Stephen and Meredith Foster, wonderful, wonderful people. And part of the learning process was to do my own how many days was I out there? Now I can't remember. 7 days of walking alone in the desert, fasting from food. I had water. I carried water, and I journeyed through what was considered the underworld. I was really on a process. Each day had a theme, and in that process, I met with the sense of my own mortality and got clear about my community, my focus of my work, and the message that came through very loud and clear, which was pretty broad, was earth, birth, death, earth, birth, death. And I came back from that journey really clear that I was starting with earth and that that was the process that I was going to be in through my life, was focusing with earth work and focusing with birth and focusing with death. So in my 20s, late 20s and early 30s, I had a business called Earth Journey, and I ran a wilderness camp for children who were preteens, early teens. We lived out in the woods, and we cooked all our food outside, and we canoed and hiked and learned about the earth ways, learned about listening to the songs of the birds and the wild foods, and learned how to live together in a community in the wild. And I also brought groups of women out into the wilderness as well to do more spiritual opening and connected journey. So I did that for a decade or so, and then I moved into the earth realm, and I could feel the pull. Now it's time to cultivate my birth skills as a labor and delivery nurse and a pregnancy massage therapist and a childbirth educator. So I did all of that, and I let go some of the earthing work. And then over a period of time, I started to hear the calling. It was time to do the deathing work, and I started to move out of the birth realm as a nurse and went into the nursing with the deathing process.
Uh-huh.
And what I find is that it's the same journey. There's a gateway between the worlds of birth and death coming in or going out. The way that you stand there as a guide is the same. And it's the same in the rites of passage work in the wilderness as well.
That's very interesting. And you've integrated that into your work too.
I think what I have really integrated is being a rites of passage guide and recognizing that birth is a major rite of passage and death is a major rite of passage, and I'm comfortable being in that process. It's a kind of a messy process often on either end.
Mm-hmm.
And through life, of course, you know, living life itself is not not always smooth flowing. And
well, my life
a lot
can
of
be kind of messy, so I know what you
yeah,
mean.
Life can be very messy. So when I'm not everyone is comfortable with the idea of really being there for people who are entering into altered states of awareness, which is what happens when you're giving birth and which is what happens when you're dying. You enter into a different, the boundaries that we know as our identity starts to dissolve. And there's this melting point of, you know, something is coming through. When you're giving birth, there is this energy that's beyond anything you've ever known before,
mm-hmm.
That flows through the body and transforms you as you're giving birth to this life that's coming out of your body. So there's nothing else like that. It's one of the most incredible experiences ever. But not everyone is comfortable standing there in that,
right,
you know, as
right.
a support person. And same with death. When then it's really scary because you're having to watch your own mortality, you know, face your own mortality when you watch others dying. And it is not pretty. It's often not pretty at all when people are dying. Mm-hmm. And it can be very, very challenging. And it's actually pretty common for labor and delivery nurses to become hospice nurses or to go back and forth. Those of us who are comfortable on the edges seem to be able to do that.
I like that, what you said, that both of these rites of passage, you know, which we all experience, every single one of us, you know, birth and death are altered states of awareness. And you talk about the boundaries as we know as our identities start to dissolve. I wrote that down mm-hmm. because I think that's a powerful way of speaking about it, Leslie. And obviously you've observed it again and again and participated and helped people on those journeys again and again and again. And I'd say you know what you're talking about. Wow.
Yeah, I'm familiar with that part.
Yeah.
And one of the things I think I've learned in the process, you know, doing the earth work and spending a lot of time alone in the woods. I actually lived a year twice, a year alone in the woods in Maine, once in a cabin. I had built a little cabin off the grid completely. And once in a little wigwam, actually. I lived way out in the woods. I built a little wigwam, and I spent a year living outside. So I really cultivated a sense of communication and relationship with what I say the voices of the earth really came through to me, a deeper understanding of our relationship with earth. And when I share that with other people through all of my work, through the earth, birth, and death work, I recognize this sense of hunger. There's so many lost souls in the world. And when we remember our connection to our body and to the earth body, we begin to restore a sense of wholeness in ourselves and sense of connection to something bigger.
Yeah.
And just our little lives running around trying to make money or get things done.
Yes.
Whatever we're doing, scurrying about.
Yes. So you're really aware at a much deeper level of how we're connected to the earth, which is a wonderful thing. You know, we could use a whole lot more of that with what we've done to the earth. You know, we have used her rather than loved her. So, quite difficult. So then in the 80s, you had a business that you called Earth Journeys. You've mentioned that, where you you took people all kinds of ages and you spent time with them outdoors. It was, you know, more of an outdoor school in a way, maybe for kids or for adults as well. Maybe people learned how to hear the birds sing.
Yeah, it was, I'd say, you know, with the kids, it was really about, actually what really came about was this sense of community and belonging. The same kids came back each summer. I just ran that camp for 3 years, and we had this same wonderful community that I'm still in touch with, these people who are now in their 30s and having children themselves, and actually was just at a birth this winter for one of those former campers who was at her second birth. I've been at both the births of her children and supported her. So there's a real wonderful mentorship role that I feel has been really a blessing for me to be in that position, because I had a mentor as I was growing up, and I've offered that through that camp program and other ways to be supporting
younger people
in that way. Yeah.
So Leslie, go ahead.
Yeah. I was just going to say the other part of that Earth Journeys was a lot of women's rites of passage work that I offered and shared in collaboration with other people at times, that we would guide women's trips. So I mostly always work with women or children as opposed to doing very many co-ed Earth Journeys. The camp was co-ed, but so I don't have that anymore. I don't I still do Vision Quest work, but I let go of that as a primary business for myself and, you know, expanded into all this other work.
Wow. So talk to us about what you know, is the focus of your work now. You have such a rich variety here. What are you mostly doing now?
So what I'm doing now is I've for now let go of my nursing work to really focus on the Mother Touch. And that is, one is my teaching of the massage programs. And right now I'm in Kauai. I've been in Hawaii since 2008. early December teaching classes here, massage classes for spa therapists and also for doulas and midwives and other birth supporters. I'm about to teach a four-day class this coming weekend. And I'm heading to Indonesia in a couple months to teach over there. There's a woman who started spas there for pregnant and postpartum moms and babies. And so I've been invited to come over and share. And I'm sure I'm going to learn a lot from them. They have spas now all over Indonesia, specifically for Indonesian moms and pregnant moms and babies and new moms. So I'm going over there to share, and then I'll be teaching again in Oregon. So that's one aspect of my business is this teaching, and also the midwife classes that I mentioned with a holistic pelvic care worker. I'm not teaching holistic pelvic care, but I'm teaching pelvic awareness.
Well, you know,
you have
taken your skill set and your interest and if I can talk to you about the principles of solopreneurship, you have developed a deep and narrow niche, as I like to call it. You really have some expertise and, you know, have become known as an expert. And because of that, it sounds like you are really doing some very interesting work that has led you to international teaching and international training, maybe events that you wouldn't have done otherwise if you hadn't, you know, focused on developing your expertise in your particular field.
That's right.
Say it that way?
Yeah, I think you just said it quite fine. It's really true. And what's exciting is when, you know, how I started out, it was I wanted to be able to travel around the world for the rest of my life and develop some skills to do that. You know, I had different skills. I never imagined this is what it would be exactly, but I see that I actually have accomplished the development of skills that I can use around the world now.
Yes, you did it. So, so you're being recognized. Sounds like pretty much internationally as an expert in Mother Touch, and people are inviting you to come and share their particular approach and learn from you. And sounds fun to me to be in Kauai teaching and also then moving on to Indonesia, and you'll probably go other places. It sounds pretty wonderful.
Yes, it's very exciting. I'll be in Burma as well, or Myanmar, and I'm hoping to connect with traditional midwives there and share some while I'm there, which is a very exciting place to go at this time before it's been developed by the Western world. So it's just opened up its borders for people to.
Well, you know, I'm always talking to solos and encores about finding their particular niche and their specialty and you know, developing a single approach, you know, one niche, you know, one specialty, one piece of expertise that they have and becoming known with it, becoming with that profound knowledge I like to talk about. And then, you know, from there, all the doors open, and it sounds like that's what you've been able to do with your career.
Yeah, I think it's been, you know, I think part of the process as a solopreneur is and finding the ways to make a business work. You know, there's a lot of facing the beliefs, the inner beliefs that maybe you talk about, too, you know, have talked about is, you know, what limiting self-beliefs do I have that prevent me from coming out into the world with my gifts?
And
you know, I've had to address a lot of that and find them on really subtle levels. Where do I not believe in myself enough to be able to do this? And I think I'm in a space right now of really acknowledging, getting on an even deeper level, like, what my particular skills are, what my particular gifts are, what that deep and narrow niche is that I've created, you know, and being acknowledged for that and acknowledging that is really rewarding.
So could you articulate that? You know, what is it that you teach that is not taught by others? And, you know, have you been able to articulate your niche?
Well, I think what is probably a bit different from how others, there's only a few people who are actually teaching the pregnancy birth work in a similar sort of vein. There's really only several of us. I think what's probably different about my approach than the others is because I come from this rites of passage background, and I come from an anthropology background and a multicultural approach background. So I'm really interested and always have been interested. I've lived in many other cultures to see what are we forgetting or what are we missing, and seeing that in other cultures, in other traditions, the birth process and pregnancy and the role of a woman to be able to give birth has been seen with incredible reverence and great devotion to her, in that, you know, she's the goddess who's bringing life, you know, creating life. Only a goddess can do that. You know,
right.
So women are seen in that light. And when I'm teaching, I'm bringing that forward again. I'm helping us to remember what this process really is about, what's really happening beyond, again, you know, I see often in our society people are scurrying about on the surface. And as you had mentioned, you know, I like to get deeper down in how we can change the world by touching mothers and bringing an awareness of the wisdom of other cultures and the long, deep knowing of what it is to support mothers. And that comes through in the holistic pelvic care. That's the other part of what I'm doing right now also. So I mentioned sharing with midwives about integrative pelvic care work, and I wanted to clarify I'm not teaching holistic pelvic care, because that's actually work that Tammy Kent in Portland has developed. She's a physical therapist who's really set in motion a whole wave of awareness about the importance of restoring wholeness and connecting with our creative vitality in the pelvis as women. And so that's part of my work teaching pregnancy work and working with pelvic issues for women, is remembering who we are. And, you know, if you take the word remembering, you know, remembering is what we know of as remembering, but it's also remembering ourselves. It's bringing our body back together, bringing a connection of ourselves into the body, our body, and bringing parts of ourselves back together and restoring wholeness. So I think that it's an approach that I have that may be different than what I share with people. I talk a lot about presence and listening and attentiveness and paying attention to our intuition as we, and feeling, working with the energy body as well. So that's different. I'm not just a technical, you know.
No, I can hear that you're
way and move the body this way.
You're well beyond being just doing technical work, and I'm sure that there's a portion of what you do that is highly technical and trained, and, you know, you got trained as a nurse and on, but it seems to me then you've taken it to an entirely new level and a, you know, added this whole piece of who we are and connected to the earth, as you say, and going back eons, and, you know, that the process of motherhood and birth and passages, all passages, including the other end of life, dying, are all sacred, and they have meaning, and they're important, and, you know, we shouldn't do them without, we shouldn't do them thoughtlessly. We shouldn't do them without reverence, is what I'm hearing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I think there's a few things, you know, in any rite of passage, and I see it as, you know, when I'm training therapists or working with birth professionals in touching, I think of, you know, supporting them in a sense to be guides as well, or to be standing at the gateway as well with people. And I think there's certain things that, certain steps of what any rite of passage involves. And one is to surrender anything we think we know about our that. Right? We that's a big one.
Yes, it is.
In order to give birth and in order to die, we really have to surrender, because it's the reality is so much bigger than we ever can know in our little mind. And I also think of what Mary Oliver says, something about letting the soft animal of your body love what it loves. That's all we have to do. And I think that's important in the process of a rite of passage also, is that deep, really listening inside. Tammy would say, you know, really listening into the pelvis, really listening into the deeper voices of what is right for us, what's right for us in each moment, and follow it, learning to follow that, and learning to notice where the fears block us from experiencing whatever it is in front of us, how we shut down, how we can open at any moment, because of how we use our mind. So I think of that as part of the process of how to support people in any rite of passage.
Yeah. So as I say, you're talking about something that is very sacred, very reverent. We're not talking about technical stuff, and I mean, the technical stuff is there. It has to be there for you to do your work, and, you know, to pay attention to modern medicine and, you know, all those issues. However, you know, there's a whole other element to it.
There's another element, yes. So I like to incorporate that in. And there's a lot of technical, you know, I like the anatomy and physiology and the kinesiology and how to use your body mechanics when you're working with women so that you don't get hurt, and maintaining awareness in both realms. So I'm kind of a bridge builder. That's what I see. You know, I go into the nursing world, but I also go into the energy realm. I work between worlds in my teaching and in my work in general.
That's pretty wonderful. So let me ask you a left brain question here about this wonderful work that you're doing, Leslie. How do you find your clients?
Well, in my clients, it's interesting. You know, I've been here in Kauai and over on Maui for the past couple of months now. And I'll tell you that what they call the coconut wireless here is pretty fantastic. So I mentioned to some people in the birth realm my work with the pelvic care work, and I have, you know, had people just pretty much booked up the whole time I've been here. So the word of mouth has been really important here. Also for my teaching, I have taught at the Oregon School of Massage. That's where I developed this program. That's where I went to school and then developed the program there. So I've been teaching there twice a year, just regularly for 20 years. As I have been putting myself out into the world, I find my clients are either individuals who find me because I have a website that's active, and people find me through my website, which is touchforbirth.com. But also making contact with other schools that don't have a prenatal program in their system, and so making contact that way. But here I ended up teaching at spas, so the spa therapist is different. Of the really high-end resource, need to be certified or trained in prenatal work to be able to work with pregnant clients that they have. So I'm finding there's a lot of interest here in the spas. There's plenty of spas in Hawaii, so that's a place I'm working into. So just in terms of current work and current, you know, I'm still spreading out now with this work, so I'm interested to see in the multiple directions that this, where the interest is lying and where the interest is coming from.
Yeah.
So in terms of the pelvic work, I do talks. I do presentations. I've been presenting at conferences. For both the mother touch and the pelvic care work. So it's a lot about networking, and people are interested. You know, people are excited, and so finding the people who are in the field who reach many other people, it seems to be you know, I think that's always what you might say is the
right.
the way. It's, you know, the word of mouth is still the most powerful, potent way to.
Yes.
And talking, you know, getting interviewed on your radio show.
There you go. Yeah.
You know,
yeah. Oh, that's good. So you just kind of get known and have your expertise known, and people talk. We may call it, what do they call it in Hawaii? You said the coconut wire.
The coconut wireless. Yeah. The coconut wireless. It is amazing, really. It is amazing, the sense of community here and how things spread like wildfire.
Well, you know, we do talk, you know, as human beings. In fact,
yes.
you know, you've heard that concept of 6 degrees of separation, and they tell you that the reason that that is true, you know, that you could find, get a message to somewhere, anyone in the world, whether you knew them or not, passing through usually about an average of 6 connections, because every adult carries soundbite information of about 2,000 other people, and we talk, you know. And we index things, and, you know, if we know somebody who is facing one of these passages, and, you know, we would say, you know, I just talked to or heard this radio show with Leslie, and, you know, it was really great, and I love the idea, and you might contact her, and, you know, that's at work all the time.
Yeah. It's
quite
really,
amazing.
And I think it, so I think that's a really important piece for anybody, you know, it's how you can't get known just by putting a website up. You know, a lot of, I know of people who got very excited because they made a website. And then, you know, the reality of, well, and who's going to come to it? You know, how do people find you? That isn't it. It's so much. I think that's why Facebook has become such a boon for many people. It seems to be able to use that well to spread news and spread information about their work.
I think
it's thousands of people at once.
And when you're teaching people who are massage practitioners. Are you also teaching, you know, other nurses or other healthcare practitioners?
Yeah, well, midwives and doulas, but, you know, one of my dreams is, because I've worked as a labor and delivery nurse, is to work in helping hospitals, birth centers, to integrate more touch. So I would love to be training nurses in simple ways, even though it's very busy and, you know, you're running in and out of work. I know what it's like to work as a nurse in anywhere, and in labor and delivery. And a lot of the birthing process has become very technical now. You know, there's a lot of machines. And by the time I left labor and delivery at this one particular hospital, this was happening already at other places, but at this hospital, they were finally getting to this point where you could just sit at the desk and monitor numbers of women at once, and you didn't even have to go into the room that much.
Oh, my goodness.
I think there's a lot of that going on with now also with epidurals. So the whole process, that rite of passage process, has been altered, and the empowerment process that happens for some women in the birthing is shifted into a medical process instead. But the reality is that if a nurse goes in and touches a woman in labor on her shoulder, just as a reassuring, you're doing fine, for you know, a few seconds, it's been documented that women's blood pressure decreases, the stress hormones, the cortisol levels decrease, and their labor is shifted, even with the simplest of touch. So I have a dream, desire to get into hospitals, to be invited into hospitals to share some of this with nurses, in that, you know, to integrate it into that system. And in that vein, I was conversing with a hospital in Maine, where I live part of the year, in Rockland, Maine. And I wanted to teach a staff there, and what we ended up deciding was we should just create a conference. So up until just a few days ago, they decided they can't have it happen this year. There isn't enough help to make this conference happen this year, but we they were excited about the idea of having a Getting Back in Touch conference for health care professionals in birthing, where the whole conference would be about touch and the benefits of different ways of integrating that throughout the whole perinatal cycle. So, yes, that's one of my goals, is to work
very
more
good.
With medical professionals.
You know, as an advisor, I'm going to offer you a piece of advice I think might help you achieve that goal, which
mm-hmm.
would be to have measured outcomes with
mm-hmm.
Mothers with whom you work. You know, if you can show that the blood pressure actually, or that you know, there's a positive change of some kind, less medication,
mm-hmm.
less, you know, whatever
mm-hmm.
going on, I think that would just be perfect. And then you can say, see, this isn't just me talking about this woo-woo stuff, you know, about the rite of passage, but
mm-hmm.
this is me showing you scientifically of the difference that this can make and, you know, the health of the mother, the health of the child, you know, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, maybe they even get more recommendations from patients, you know, I don't know, whatever it is, but if people can get sort of a measurement of an outcome, a positive outcome that they want, it helps you make your case.
Yes, and I think there's plenty of research that documents exactly those
mm-hmm.
things you mentioned about.
Yeah.
And that's important. And I think the piece that I don't have that I'm not sure how to get is the saving, you know, and then it comes down to money. And the reality of if births are healthier, or if they don't end up, you know, with babies in the neonatal intensive care because of birth, you know, something happening
mm-hmm.
during the birth process,
mm-hmm.
or they don't have to do all these other interventions because their stress levels were reduced with touch, there's got to be some financial savings. Someone could figure out that part,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
That's when I think the changes will seriously could be implemented into a big system, you know, into a big hospital system, it could be recognized more. Yeah,
you're totally right. You know, if you took the, you know, maybe the number of what would I say, follow-on effects, you know, where there was more stress or there was more problems or there was, you know, longer stays in the hospital or whatever that cost money, and you quantified
mm-hmm.
that and then said, okay,
yeah.
you know, under my system, the stay drops from an average of 3 days to 2.2 days, and that, you know, 0.8 of a day we know costs so
right.
much, and multiply that
right.
times the, you know, 10,000 patients that you see every year, and so we can save you this. You know, I agree that's kind of one of the ways to make the case. You know, that's what gets heard,
mm-hmm.
not the side of, you know, oh, this is an important passage and, you know, how
mm-hmm.
light it is.
Right.
We love
no,
that.
No, it's got to come down to the evidence-based.
Yeah, yeah, the evidence-based. Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's
probably
worth your time to work on, you know, and
as
one of your pieces of bringing this to other hospitals and to train other people as well. And maybe what they could do is if you work with people who've had a long time practice and they begin using more of your tools and techniques that, you know, you could have them do their record keeping of what happens,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, gather it over time.
Yeah, yeah.
So, because it's really quite awful to think about the route that we've gone is, you know, a nurse monitoring 8 or 9 women in labor with a, you know, a television screen and a monitoring, and she never has to go in there.
You know? Well, I did that work, too. When I first got out of nursing school, I worked at a high-risk OB hospital in Boston. That's all that they did was OB. They had transports from all over New England, and that's how it was. We were able to monitor people. Everyone was high risk, so everyone was having danger. And you had several patients at once that you had to watch from a distance and then run in there, you know, if something was going on and run back out. It was pretty outrageous and unfortunate well, it was a whole system.
Yeah.
But yes, I agree, and I have I presented at a conference last fall, all about the benefits of touch, the evidence-based benefits.
Oh, yeah.
You know, with research of the hormonal shifts and the, you know, really the outcomes for babies is very, very well documented. There's a woman, Tiffany Field, who has an institute called the Touch Research Institute in Florida. And she and a lot of other people have come out with quite a bit of research focused on the perinatal time and the actual hormonal, chemical, and emotional, psycho-emotional benefits, as well as in showing how women who get touched during labor have shorter labors, decreased interventions, decreased use of medication, decreased levels of neonatal issues, and express greater satisfaction with their birth. I mean, there's a lot of different studies that show this. So that's all part of what I like to share also. Is,
well, I think that's,
you know,
very smart of you.
We have that right brain, left brain needs.
Yeah, that's very smart of you, because that's definitely how the money decisions get made. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes people need the evidence in order to support what they really want to do,
right.
You know, and have to get the budget by the board of trustees,
yeah,
or the
that's
director
right.
of finance, you know. And so they use that argument, even though they're just dying to add this piece to the work.
Yes, right.
Well, Leslie, I've just had a wonderful time talking with you. And, you know, if I can summarize what you're doing in the principles of better, smarter, richer, and, you know, with our Encore entrepreneurship, it certainly is clear that you've taken your expertise that you've developed over the years, and you've created a wonderful niche for yourself, and that you have become known because of that niche, and you've created a terrific solo business. And, you know, your marketing, just like you talk about, or we talk about people marketing, which means you get known and the word spreads, and it's much more than just having a website. You give a lot of talks and you teach and you stay involved. And what it has led to for you is, a wonderful career and a life full of great meaning, and you're bringing important things to the world. So
yeah.
I love hearing about your solo business. And, you know, you may not think of it that way. You probably think of more of it as a calling.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a wonderful solo business that you've created, and,
mm-hmm.
and I've enjoyed talking with you. So if yeah. some of our listeners would like to talk with you more about your work or how that you can help them, how can they reach you?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Well, they can call me easily. My number is 207-323-5101. I can say that again, 207-323-5101. And my email is Leslie, L-E-S-L-I-E, at touchforbirth. And that's the name of my website also, which is touchforbirth.com. And next, I'm teaching this weekend in Kauai. If somehow there's anyone from Kauai listening, there's still some room in the class this weekend, pregnancy massage class, prenatal certification. And then I'll be in Indonesia in March teaching, and then in April, I'll be back at the Oregon School of Massage teaching the full maternity massage program, which will start on the 25th of April for 2 weekends. I'll be there. And then I'll be back east and teaching in the East Coast over the summertime.
That's just wonderful. Leslie, thank you so much. I have enjoyed our conversation greatly. And listeners, I want to remind you that this is Jackie B. Peterson. I'm the author of Better, Smarter, Richer, 7 Business Principles for Solo, Encore, and Creative Entrepreneurs, and that we have this weekly radio show featuring a business with one of our solopreneurs, which has led to 2 years of fabulously interesting conversations with solos who are doing multiple and many things to enrich and enhance and change the world, and it's been lots of fun. So I just want to give you a heads up that starting next week, for the next 3 weeks, we're going to have 3 weeks of conversation with a consultant. His name is Doug Lundrigan. He has a company called Lighthouse Business Solutions, and Doug and I are going to have 3 conversations about the culture of business in the 21st century, and we're going to talk about how new businesses are different from businesses that at least I grew up with in the 20th century, and what has come to be, and how those of you who are saying, wow, I either want to work somewhere in one of those businesses today and find work in it, you know, find a job in a 21st century business, or I want to be a coach consultant as an encore entrepreneur and take my expertise and, you know, sell it inside those 21st century businesses. And we're going to talk about the culture of the businesses and the skills that you need to have to be successful in a current, you know, 21st century business, and how you acquire those skills. So I hope, listeners, that you will be tuning in. We expect to have some really interesting discussion going on. Thank you all for being part of our radio show today, and I hope that you will go to my website, bettersmarterricher.com, and leave some comments on the blog, subscribe to the newsletter, and certainly buy the Better, Smarter, Richer book. Take care, have a great week, and I'll talk with you next week. Goodbye.